Tri-States. This is IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. And this is Ken with the voice from Missouri on Thursday, not Friday. I had to switch days for this week. But I am still reading from the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. And now we'll begin with our first piece from the top of the fold. Probe traces path of missing 524K. An investigation into the alleged theft of over $524,000 in federal money Dubuque County attempted to send to the city of Dyersville has unearthed a multi-layered scheme run by professional criminals, according to Sheriff Joe Kemp. However, he said the county is no closer to recovering the funds that since have been moved among multiple banks before eventually being converted to Bitcoin. The incident remains under investigation. Emails between the city of Dyersville and Dubuque County, recently provided to the Telegraph Herald, show a conversation between Dubuque County's budget department and the email account of Trisha Myers, Dyersville's city clerk. They include requests for a money transfer to a bank in Georgia and repeated prompts for payment. The email conversation and the investigation center on $524,238.88 in American Rescue Plan Act funds dispersed by Dubuque County intended to pay for a portion of a 3,000-seat stadium being built at the Field of Dreams in Dyersville, dubbed This Is Iowa Ballpark. Dubuque County officials say the money was taken by a third party after Dyersville's municipal email system was compromised. At 9:15 a.m. on November 21st, Myers' email account sent a message to Dubuque County Budget Director Stella Rundy with an invoice for the $524,238.88 amount. I have attached invoice 2023-11 for This Is Iowa Ballpark. If you need anything else, please let me know. Thanks, the email read. Myers declined to comment for this story and referred all questions to Dyersville Assistant City Attorney Ed Henry. I have spoken with the city, and I am not authorized to share any information at this time other than that the investigation is ongoing and the city is awaiting further information, Henry said in an email to the TH. Later on November 21st, a message from Myers' account asked Rundy, could you tell me when the city could get reimbursed for this invoice? On November 27th, Myers' email account sent another email to Rundy saying, hi, Stella, please advise. Rundy responded November 29th, saying she had been out of the office and that the county had received the invoice. A response from the Dyersville email account on November 29th at 2:34 p.m. stated, thanks for the update, but we prefer getting paid via wire transfer instead of check payment. Could you please advise us on the best way to go about this? Wire transfers and automatic clearinghouse, ACH, transfers are different processes with varying degrees of security, speed, and fees. Dubuque County uses ACH transfers for these types of transactions. Dubuque County Auditor Kevin Drugato and Dyersville City Manager Mick Michael previously confirmed to the TH that Dubuque County had not sent money to Dyersville electronically before. I'll check with our auditor's office and let you know what I find out, Rundy's email account responded. I do know it is scheduled for payment December 7th, and you may already be set up to do ACH. Myers' account responded with, please check and also check if we are already set up for ACH. If ACH is set up, to what bank? The next day, an employee in the Dubuque County Auditor's Office sent an ACH direct deposit authorization form to Meyer's email, which was returned an hour and a half later, along with the message, "Please find attached the filled form with a void check per your request. We look forward to your payments." The ACH authorization form requested the money be sent to Synovus Bank, headquartered in Columbus, Georgia, which serves several states in the southeastern U.S. The form also included a phone number for Synovus, which, when called by the TH, was out of service. The bank address on the authorization form was listed as 806 9th Street Southeast in Dyersville, which, according to the Dyersville Post Office, is an address that does not exist. The phone number listed for Michael when called by the TH on two separate occasions rang five times and disconnected. Drugato said staff in his office received the ACH authorization forms and input the information, adding they usually have no reason to second guess the information. It's predicated on the trust of the communication back and forth, Drugato said. It all goes back to our training. If you look at an email and it is suspicious, you call. But when that email is, in fact, the correct email address coming from the person you expect it to be from, everything after that point comes from the level that this has been vetted. By the time that ACH form comes back to us, it is largely administrative. The TH asked Drugato if his office checked the address or phone number listed for Synovus. "I don't know how to answer that," Drugato said. "Every situation is different. We don't know where all the banks are. We do the majority of our transactions over ACH." He added, "Those are not typically questions that are asked when we are working with official communication with a person we do a lot of business with. Meyer's is our main point of contact for Dyersville." Drugato sent a confirmation email to Meyer's account December 5th and said the funds would be moved either December 7th or December 8th. He told the TH there was no follow-up communication between Dyersville and the county, which he said is typical for ACH transfers. The next email from Meyer's account to Rundy was sent February 19th, seeking information about a different invoice for This Is Iowa Ballpark. 1 minute later, Meyer's email sent a follow-up asking if payment for the invoice 2023-11 had been issued. The next morning, Meyer's account sent two consecutive follow-up emails at 6:14 a.m. and 6:17 a.m. They said, "Please disregard my previous email for this invoice. Payment has been received, but to our old bank. Can you send me the form again for us to update our ACH instructions for the other payment?" And 3 minutes later, "We recently changed our bank. Please send the ACH form for us to update our new banking details for payments." Rundy said in an email to the TH on Wednesday, "Those emails raised a red flag, so she then reached out to Dyersville by phone. That eventually led to the discovery that the funds were missing. As a result of their probe, investigators unraveled the path the money took once it left the county's coffers. The money was sent to Synovus and put into an account registered to an older gentleman who was seemingly also a victim and whose account operated as pass-through," Kennedy said. An email sent to Synovus's corporate office was not returned by deadline. The funds then were sent to banks in Florida, California, and Texas, Kennedy said, before being converted into cryptocurrency. "Our partners with the FBI have spoken with the individual who had the Synovus account, but also the people in the other states," he said. "We are waiting for the reports to come back from the FBI. It sounds like most of the money has been transferred to Bitcoin, and so we are trying to weave our way through that spider web." Our next front page piece, students spring into service. And with it comes a large picture of a young lady, and looks as though she's perhaps washing off, cleaning off a fire truck. And the caption reads, Western Dubuque High School junior Olivia Rinneker washes a truck at Centralia Piasta, Iowa Fire Department's headquarters as part of the annual Bobcat Service Day held on Wednesday. And our piece reads, from Piasta, Western Dubuque High School student Olivia Rinneker swapped out her desk and notebook for a hose and a pair of boots on Wednesday morning. The high school junior stood outside Centralia Piasta Fire Department headquarters with several of her classmates, spraying and scrubbing fire trucks and other department vehicles. Do you need someone to buff up those windows now? Asked Western Dubuque High School staff member Riley Gudenkoff. I just have to finish spraying it first, Olivia replied. She was one of hundreds of Western Dubuque High School students who spent the day completing service projects on campus and across the community for the annual Bobcat Service Day. Western Dubuque High School also holds an annual fall service day for students in the school's service learning classes. Students in those classes then help plan the spring Bobcat Service Day, which involves the entire high school and younger students across the district as high schoolers travel to local elementary schools to help them with service projects of their own. Cascade High School organizes its own Cougar Pride Day, which was held last week. Centralia Piasta Fire Department Captain Mike Wurzer said the volunteer department always is grateful to have help on tasks such as cleaning department vehicles. The students are washing every truck and cleaning all the insides and cabs, which is a job that nobody around here loves to do, so it helps a lot, he said. For Olivia, the work was worth it. I know that there's people out there that really need our help, and we're able to do that for them, she said, adding with a smile, I'd rather clean this than my bedroom. After Olivia finished spraying the truck, junior Liam Halverson climbed into the back seat and used a towel and cleaning spray to wash the inside of the windows. Liam said he enjoys the chance to get out of the classroom and connect with community members through the service day. It shows what kind of school we are and what we do, he said. Gudenkoff, who works in the high school's learning center, said it was particularly meaningful for her that the students were volunteering to help the firefighters, who are themselves volunteers. That's amazing, and that's how it should be in communities like this. Everyone helping each other, she said. It makes these kids aware of how important a fire and ambulance service is in the community. In the nearby town of Epworth, Dubuque County Conservation Natural Resource Technician Nick Banworth supervised a group of 11 Western Dubuque High School students as they worked to clear brush along Heritage Trail. The students removed woody plants such as willow that were encroaching on the half-mile remnant prairie. We've got some really unique prairie plants in here that you don't see much of anywhere else, like prairie dock. So that's why we want to keep it cleared out, he said. Banworth noted that several other groups of Western Dubuque students were volunteering with Dubuque County Conservation staff Wednesday. Their labor was crucial to helping the department complete projects efficiently, he said. If I was out here by myself, I wouldn't get much done in a day, but we'll get this knocked out in no time with this small army, he said. Wielding pairs of pruning shears, sophomore Lily Tyson and freshman Stella Ludovici industriously clipped at the and snipped at the woody stalks, exposing the smaller plants below to the sunlight. Stella, participating in her first Bobcat Service Day, said she found it meaningful how the whole school came together for the volunteer projects. I think sometimes people don't really see how important or beneficial it is to help the community around you, she said. Special education teacher Carla Brosius and English language learners teacher Laura Sherbring supervised the students' work. Brosius said the service day gives students the opportunity to not only lend a hand, but also receive a different kind of education from the community members they help. Banworth told the students why they're doing this job today and how it helps, Scherbring said. I think it's great when our kids can understand the impact they've had. And now our final front page piece. Victims, family, friends take stand in Enoch murder trial. Friends and family of a woman killed in Dubuque testified Wednesday to the mounting anxiety they felt in the days leading up to the discovery of her body on the first day of testimony in the trial against the man accused of killing her. Rommel D. Enoch, 24, is charged in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County with first-degree murder in relation to the death of 20-year-old Kylie J. Duster, or Duster. The trial began Tuesday with jury selection, and testimony began Wednesday. Police found Duster dead in her Dubuque home on July 28, 2021, after she had not been seen for multiple days. She was found in her bedroom closet with a piece of white fabric in her mouth and injuries to her face and neck, court documents state. Prosecutors contend Enoch killed Duster and hid her body after an argument the two had on July 25th, 2021. Kylie's life was cut short by the intentional acts of the defendant, prosecutor Amanda Lassance told jurors in her opening statement. The defendant admitted that he and Kylie got in a fight and that he overpowered her, choked her for a couple of minutes, before covering her in a blanket and hiding her in the closet. Enoch's attorney, Stephen Jehozel, said in his opening statement that the defense has no intention of arguing that Enoch did not kill Duster, but rather that it was an unplanned and unfortunate reaction to an undisclosed stimulus. We believe the evidence in this case is going to tell the story of a reaction, not an action, Jehozel said. That isn't going to make this easier, and it won't bring Kylie back. But this was a reaction by Mr. Enoch, not an action. Several witnesses testified Wednesday to seeing Duster and Enoch together the weekend of July 24 and July 25, 2021, and the pair was spotted visiting Duster's aunt, Jessica Thibodeau, on security camera footage collected from the home. Duster's mother, Alyssa Allen, testified that Duster was a real character who was always looking to make people smile. Allen said she met with her daughter at least once a week, so she found it odd when Duster did not respond to her messages on July 26, 2021. Her concern grew as the days went on, and she eventually contacted the Dubuque Police Department about locating Duster. I sent her a message Monday. No response. On Tuesday, no response. I tried calling her and messaging her some more and got nothing, Allen said. Then her brother reached out wondering if I'd heard from her, and that's when I really started to get concerned. Officers conducted a welfare check on July 28, 2021, at which point Duster was found dead. Caitlin Nauman, Duster's cousin, testified to messaging Enoch after Duster's disappearance to ask if he knew where she was and that their family was worried sick. He responded, she testified, by saying he hadn't seen her but believed she had gone to Chicago on July 23, 2021. The last time Duster was seen alive was July 25, 2021, in Dubuque. Thibodeau testified that Duster stopped by her house on July 24 and July 25, and that both times she had brought Enoch along and introduced him as her new boyfriend. Gerald Wardell testified Wednesday to meeting up with Enoch in the early morning hours of July 28, 2021, at a Dubuque gas station to purchase marijuana. He had not met Enoch previously, he stated, but had connected with him over social media. When he arrived at the gas station, he said he recognized the car Enoch was driving as Duster's. Duster and Wardell were friends and previously romantically involved, so he knew she was possessive about her car and typically would not loan it out. I just knew that it 100% was her car, Wardell testified. I got in the car and looked at him and said, do you know who I am? And he kind of shook his head. And I was like, well, that's kind of crazy because Kylie never would have sent you over here in her car if she knew you were meeting me. Wardell left, but later called Enoch after Duster's family reached out to him after not being able to get a hold of her. He asked about the car and why Enoch had it, but testified that Enoch wouldn't give him a straight answer. Brianna Melvin testified to finding the car the evening of July 28, 2021. She was friends with a family member of Duster's and was helping look for her. She said she found the car near Lincoln Elementary School in Dubuque and that it had been spray-painted gold. It had been spray-painted rose gold, and when we opened up the car door, it smelled heavily of bleach, and it had been all cleaned out, she said. The trial will resume this morning with additional witnesses. Now we'll turn to our Dubuque and Tri-State news and pick up one piece from that page. Dubuque nonprofit successfully lobbies for state zoning code change. After plans to move locations were initially thwarted by City of Dubuque zoning regulations, a Dubuque faith-based nonprofit advocated for a local code change that prompted a similar adjustment at the state level. Mary's Inn Maternity Home, which provides temporary housing and care for new and expecting mothers, advocated last fall for a Dubuque zoning code change, which was ultimately approved, to allow maternity homes to operate in homes zoned for single-family use. The push to change the code began in September when the nonprofit's request for a conditional use permit was rejected by Dubuque Zoning Board of Adjustment, which halted the home's plan to move to Churchill Drive. Some residents also voiced concerns about having the maternity home located in their neighborhood. Prior to the code change, maternity homes fell under the definition of a group home, which can only be located on properties zoned as multifamily or office residential. Ultimately, Mary's Inn moved in December to a house at 2615 Hillcrest Road after the code change was approved. We know that there are other maternity homes currently operating and a couple that are looking to open in the state. And we thought this should be just the way it is in the state, said nonprofit executive director Colleen Pasnick. She said the initial rejection from Dubuque Zoning Board of Adjustment was heartbreaking, but she is happy that it led to a statewide change. After a local attorney helped draft a bill, it was sponsored by the Iowa House Commerce Committee, chaired by Iowa Representative Shannon Lundgren, Republican Piasta. We mimicked exactly what we put into effect for mental health and disabilities, Lundgren said. This wasn't anything new to Dubuque. I had a great conversation with Dubuque city officials early in the year when we were considering this to be the least restrictive we could be. Though the legislation lost some momentum on the Senate side, Pasnick and a few others called lawmakers to advocate for the bill, which gave it the push it needed to pass. The bill was signed by Governor Kim Reynolds on Wednesday. Iowa House Minority Whip Lindsey James, a Democrat Dubuque, said the bill was not normally something she would support because she believes local governments typically understand local issues better than the legislature. She said she voted in favor of the bill because it makes regulations for city zoning more cohesive. Already, there are situations via the state where homes for people with disabilities are allowed in residential areas. I saw the bill as making the code consistent for as many groups as possible, she said. Dubuque Mayor Brad Kavanaugh said he was opposed to the local zoning change being included in a statewide law because such a decision eroded the control of local decision makers. I think that legislation like this should be left to city councils to make those decisions because they're the ones that are closest to the communities that they represent and the ones who are able to handle these situations in a responsible manner on their own, he said. Our second tri-state piece, County Board of Health plan sets priorities. The Duke County Board of Health recently approved a strategic plan for the County Health Department to guide how leaders plan public health efforts in the coming year. The plan was developed in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic after local leaders found the department was less efficient and less prepared for such an emergency than desired. Rather than immediately expanding staff as proposed by the Board of Health, Dubuque County supervisors and the Board of Health agreed that a long-term plan was needed. The strategic plan found more communication with the public and more agile reactions to health needs were key goals for countywide public health. The consultants hired to help develop the plan dug in deep and found where we had efficiencies and where we had inefficiencies, Health Department Executive Director Allie White said. This plan already has helped us find some of those efficiencies, but it's also helped us develop milestones and metrics by which we can get to where we want to be. Board of Health and Health Department leadership previously requested and expanded staff to address current and future public health needs in Dubuque County, but officials determined that a more strategic approach was needed before any expansion. The strategic plan sought to examine where expansion might be needed. One concern that supervisors initially had about expanding the department was potential duplication because the county already has a long-standing contract with Unity Point Health Visiting Nurse Association. The breadth of those services was a primary component of the strategic plan's review, White said. The VNA already provides many, many hands-on services to the public on those issues, White said. They are doing that, accomplishing those tasks with the same values we have in the department here. I wouldn't hire an immunization coordinator here because that is being done. But there is so much more to public health than immunization and health. The health department in recent years has added both an assistant public health coordinator and a second position chiefly funded by opioid settlement money. White said her department needs to focus on more community engagement in both collaborating and using comprehensive health data as identified in the strategic plan. Board of Health member Amy Crow Sunleaf said during a recent meeting that the plan will aid the department's communication with the public and enhance education efforts on topics such as water quality. It could be part of the media blitz as well, or the town hall meetings we've identified as being needed in the plan, she said. We will keep this conversation going. And one more tri-state piece. This comes from Dyersville. Couple honored as Dyersville Lions Club Persons of the Year. Anne and the late Steve Salter were named the Dyersville Lions Club Persons of the Year during a recent banquet at Dyersville Golf and Country Club. The honor came 4 months after Steve Salter's death. Lions Club President Matt Gert said the Salters made it a point to welcome everyone. No matter what, if anyone was around them, they made you feel welcome. They wanted everyone to be part of the community, he said. Lions Club member Jacques Ray recalled the couple's steadfast loyalty to Dyersville. In honoring their remarkable legacy, we celebrate a legacy of compassion, dedication, and selflessness that has left an indelible mark on our community, she said. Together, Steve and Anne embody the true spirit of service, inspiring all who have been privileged to know. Anne's unwavering commitment to make a difference in the lives of others has been a shining example for us all. Ray, he noted that Steve Salter served on several community boards during his lifetime. All of us have benefited from Steve's leadership and his passion for the community. His ability to connect with people inspired young and old alike. Whether he was providing solid advice, mentoring new talent, or taking care of others in their times of need, she said. In accepting the award, Anne Salter said, "When we first came to this community, we joined every club we could. Steve never said no. He gave his time, and no matter how much money you have, you give your time. That's more valuable." The Salters supported many community projects, including building a dog park to honor their late daughter, Liz, helping to spearhead the new community child care center, downtown revitalization and beautification, investing in new business startups, and supporting Catholic education. Rahe said the couple, a formidable team representing the true meaning of partnership and collaboration. Their joint efforts to address issues facing our community, whether through donations, Agapacy, or volunteer work, has set a standard of excellence that will be hard to match, he said. Rahe said the community was lucky to have the Salters. As we reflect on their immense contributions, we are reminded of the power of kindness, the importance of family and community, and the legacy of love that Steve has left behind, she said. His spirit lives on in the hearts of all who knew him, and his legacy will continue to inspire all of us to be better, to do more, and to always strive for a brighter future for our community. And with this piece comes a wonderful picture of the family, and beneath it is the caption, named the Lions Club Persons of the Year 2024 are Ann and the late Steve Salter. From left to right are all the whole family members, Olivia, Ann, Olivia and Peyton Ungs, Elliot Salter, Rory, Jane, and Elise Ungs, Matt Ungs, and Brady Salter. They're all present in the picture, and it looks like it's a wonderful family. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by Tupaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken, not in my regular Friday reader seat, but I am in Thursday, since I will be unable to read tomorrow. This is Ken, and I am reading from the Thursday, May 2nd edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. We now will turn to today's obituaries. Jean M. Rieg. Jean or Jeanne Marie Rieg, 81, of Dubuque, died Monday, April 29th at the Unity Point Health Finley Hospital in Dubuque. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. until 10:45 a.m. Saturday, May 4th at Holy Spirit Parish, Holy Ghost Catholic Church. The Mass of Christian Burial for Jean will be 11 a.m. on Saturday, May 4th at Holy Spirit Parish, Holy Ghost Catholic Church, with Father Jeff Frieden as the celebrant. Burial will be at Mount Calvary Cemetery. Jean was born August 18, 1942, in Rickardsville, Iowa, the daughter of John and Veronica Lex Regan. On August 18, 1962, she married Leroy Rieg in Rickardsville. She was proud of her Irish heritage, coming from a large Catholic family. Growing up on a farm outside of Rickardsville, her family grew produce for year-round food supply, and she loved her mom's massive flower. Jean worked for Finley Hospital for over 30 years in the physical therapy department, which she absolutely loved. After retiring, she would help out at Dubuque Physical Therapy. She always said, "I wish I never quit working." Jean also enjoyed packing up the family and joining her sisters and their families on camping trips and vacations to Colorado and many fishing trips up north. She was the biggest supporter of Leroy in his drag racing days. She even won the Powder Puff World Series in 1970. Jean and Leroy had a shared love of cars, especially their 1933 Chevy Street Rod. A few of her other favorite things were family gatherings, including fish fries and cookouts. Christmas was her favorite holiday. She loved the snow and loved shoveling snow. Early morning walks with Leroy, and then an ice-cold beer together in the afternoon. Above all, Jean was happiest when she was spending time with her family. She was so proud of all her grandkids and was always there to support them at their school activities and sporting events. Jean will be remembered for being a little Irish spitfire. Thank you for being the best wife, mom, and grandma. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory is in care of the arrangements. A photo tribute can be viewed and condolences sent to the family by visiting Jean's obituary at www.hskthcares.com. Nicholas D. Guler. Cheryl. Nicholas D. Nick Guler, 39, of Cheryl, passed away of heart failure on April 29th at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital. Visitation will be from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday, May 3rd at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Additional visitation will begin at 9 a.m. on Saturday, May 4th at the funeral home, with a funeral service to begin at 12 p.m. with Pastor John Sorensen officiating. The burial will be at a later date in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Nick was born June 17, 1984 in Dubuque, the son of Dean and Rose Gert Guler. He graduated from Hempstead High School in 2002 and from NICC as a diesel tech in 2003. He was currently employed at John Deere in the Mechanics Experimental Department. He also worked for Eartham Custom Farming, along with countless side gigs wherever help was needed. Although Nick worked hard, he played even harder. He lived his life to the fullest. He learned this lesson early in life when his father passed away in 2010. Nick's favorite place was on his boat on the river with a fishing pole in his hand. He was an avid fisherman and attended many tournaments. We could hardly find a picture of him without a fish in it. His family and friends were most important. He is Uncle Nick to Will and Jade and Uncle Gub to many more. Nick's final gift to others was being a tissue donor with the Iowa Donor Network. Although our hearts are breaking, we know he is watching over us. Yep. Ryan P. Schneider, Lancaster. Ryan P. Schneider, 51 of Lancaster, died Monday, April 29th. Visitation will be held from 3 to 8 p.m. Monday, May 6th at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster. Private services and burial will take place. V. Joyce Boone Merritt, Savannah. V. Joyce Boone Merritt, 59 of Savannah, died on Tuesday, April 30th. A celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, May 6th at Law Jones Funeral Home in Savannah. Randy L. Law, Thompson, Illinois. Randy L. Law, 69 of Thompson, died on Monday, April 29th. Visitation will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. Friday, May 3rd at Law Jones Funeral Home in Savannah, followed by burial in Spring Lake Cemetery in Savannah. A celebration of life will follow at the Moose Lodge in Savannah. Foster Heller, Stockton. Foster Heller, 95 of Stockton, died Monday, April 29th. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Monday, May 6th at Holy Cross Catholic Church in Stockton, where services will follow. Herman Funeral Home of Stockton is assisting the family. Annabelle Jantsch, Piasta. Annabelle Ann Jantsch, a loving, compassionate, no-nonsense mother who had a strong impact on many lives, died peacefully surrounded by her loved ones on April 30th. A visitation for Anne will be held from 4:30 p.m. till 7 p.m. Friday, May 3rd at the Rife Funeral Home in Piasta. Visitation will also be held after 10 a.m. at the funeral home on Saturday, where a celebration of life service for Anne will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, May 4th at the Rife Funeral Home in Piasta with Deacon Jim Getz. Anne was 85 years old. Born in Bayfield, Wisconsin, the oldest child of John and Loretta Fizzle Mesner. Anne grew up in Washburn, Wisconsin, and after high school attended St. Joseph's School of Nursing in Marshfield, Wisconsin, graduating as a registered nurse in 1959. She earned her BS degree from St. Francis College, 1986. She married William Bill Jantsch in Dorchester, Wisconsin on June 18, 1960. They met on a blind date attending a Milwaukee Braves baseball game. Anne's nursing career included experiences at hospitals in Marshfield, UW-Madison, Platteville, and Cuba City, Wisconsin, and Dubuque. She retired after 24 years of service at Mercy Health Center Behavioral Health Unit 2 West in 1997, the last 18 years as the nurse manager. Anne's community service included phone-a-friend crisis line, a critical incident debriefing team that was involved in the Oklahoma City bombing rescue effort, hospice volunteer, and blood drive coordinator at St. John the Baptist. She enjoyed babysitting her grandchildren, growing flowers, reading, watching mysteries, playing bridge, and doing water aerobics and golfing at Thunder Hills Country Club. Besides friendships with the Thops and taking senior classes at Mount Carmel, she was thrilled to travel the world with husband Bill to Egypt, Germany, the Czech Republic, Hawaii, Alaska, the Bahamas, Peru, Belize, Panama, China, Tibet, and Israel. She also enjoyed spending retirement Februarys on the beach at Alabama Gulf Shores or Arizona to have a girls' week with her four daughters. Memorials may be given in her honor to a PBS TV or radio station in your area, Hospice of Dubuque, or any mental health awareness organization. Though often saddened by the passing of those we love, we are also able to rejoice with the arrival of those that we can learn to love. And we have one birth announcement for today, Tuesday, April 30th. Myers, Mitchell and Lexi Myers of New Vienna, Iowa, a girl at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Welcome aboard, little one, and may life hold all kinds of excitement for you. And now we'll start taking a look at various little pieces of area news in brief. And our first one, police, numerous fights during large disturbance at Dubuque Park. Police said they are investigating a disturbance in a Dubuque park that involved as many as 50 people. Dubuque Police Department Lieutenant Luke Bach said police responded at approximately 6:42 p.m. Tuesday to Comiskey Park for a large disturbance in which a handgun reportedly was displayed. There were numerous fights in the park, Bach said. Officers remained on the scene for a while. Bach said there were no reports of injuries or gunfire and no arrests have been made. It's still an active investigation as we work to identify all the parties involved, Bach said. Charges are likely. Police, pedestrian struck by vehicle, killed on Dubuque roadway. Police said a pedestrian died after being struck by a vehicle in Dubuque. David Miller, 47, of Dubuque, was pronounced dead at 12:06 a.m. Wednesday, according to Dubuque Police. A press release states that police responded at approximately 11:55 p.m. Tuesday to the eastbound lanes of the 3100 block of Dodge Street for a report of a vehicle striking a pedestrian. Officers found Miller in the roadway unresponsive with significant head trauma, the release states. Members of the Dubuque Police and Fire Departments began life-saving efforts but ultimately were unsuccessful. Police determined that Miller entered the roadway on foot and was struck by a vehicle driven by Charles Calkins, 53, of East Dubuque, Illinois, the release states. Calkins remained on the scene and met with police. The release states that police are investigating the incident but that no charges are pending against Calkins. Miller's body will be sent for an autopsy at the Iowa Office of the State Medical Examiner in Ankeny. City of Dubuque seeks public input on creation of railroad quiet zone. Dubuque city officials seek public input on the impacts of train noise in the city and the potential creation of a railroad quiet zone in the downtown area. A press release states that the city is participating in a regional study to assess the feasibility of creating railroad quiet zones. Quiet zones are federally designated crossings or series of crossings where the train operators are restricted from sounding their horns or whistles except in emergencies or specific situations outlined by local regulations. According to the release, the city is exploring the creation of a quiet zone due to an expected increase in train noise after a recent merger between Canadian Pacific and Kansas City Southern Railways. Train traffic in Dubuque is expected to increase from about 6 to 9 trains per day to as many as 18 trains per day by 2027. To qualify for a quiet zone designation, municipalities must implement safety measures such as improving or adding crossing gates, installing raised medians between traffic lanes, and installing additional signage. The public is invited to fill out a short survey available at cityofdubuque.org/quietzonessurvey through 5 p.m. Wednesday, May. Applicants sought for Lafayette County Judicial Vacancy from Darlington, Wisconsin. Applicants are sought for the judicial vacancy on the Lafayette County Circuit Court. An appointment will fill a vacancy created by the death of Judge Dwayne M. Jorgensen on April 21st, according to a press release. The release states that an appointed judge will complete a term ending July 31st, 2025. Applications are available by clicking Apply to Serve on evers.wi.gov. Applicants should email a completed application form and supporting materials to govjudicialappointments@wisconsin.gov by 5 p.m. May 15th. Authorities, one hurt in two-vehicle crash in Lafayette County, Gratiot, Wisconsin. Authorities said one person was injured in a two-vehicle crash in Lafayette County. Travis A. Wilson, 41, of Cuba City, received moderate injuries and burns and was transported to a hospital, according to the Lafayette County Sheriff's Department. A press release states that Wilson was pulling a trailer and traveling west on Wisconsin at 11 at 12:29 p.m. Tuesday in Gratiot Township when he slowed to make a turn. A straight truck driven by Luis A. Fuentes Lara, 22, of Middleton, struck Wilson's vehicle, causing both vehicles to enter a ditch, where Wilson's trailer caught fire. Fuentes Lara and his passenger, Robert C. Avalos, 23, of Middleton, were able to escape their vehicles and were not injured. Divine Word College to showcase photographers' work, Epworth. A reception will mark the opening of a photo exhibit at Divine Word College. Sacred Sight, a photographic invitation to see with new eyes, will open with a reception from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, May 3rd at the college, 102 Jacoby Drive, Southwest in Epworth, according to a press release. The exhibit features the work of photographer Aaron Maroney Lavelle. Lavelle is a reporter and photographer for the Dyersville Commercial, a publication owned by Woodward Communications Incorporated, parent company of the Telegraph Herald. Lavelle has taught photography at various locations and launched a photographic social enterprise with adults in mental health recovery. Lavelle's exhibit will be housed in the college's Wayland Art Gallery through May 17th. The gallery is open to the public from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, with additional viewing hours available upon request. Jackson County Historical Society to hold fundraising event. From Maquoketa, Jackson County Historical Society will hold a fundraising event next week. The Pasta Bake event will be held from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Monday, May 6th at the Clinton Engines Museum, 607 East Maple Street in Maquoketa, according to an online announcement. The cost is $12. The event also includes a silent auction and 50-50 raffle. Platteville Museums prepare to hold free Community Day. Platteville. A Platteville Museum campus will offer free admission to city residents one day this coming weekend. The Mining and Rollo Jameson Museums will hold a Spring Community Free Day from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, May 4th, according to an online announcement. The event is intended to thank Platteville residents for their support and includes free admission, including a guided tour of the 1845 Bevins Mine. Proof of residency is required. Registration is suggested and can be made online at mining.jameson.museum/programs or by calling 608-348-3301. Now we have a couple of lifestyle pieces that might be of interest to some of you who have young people in these. The first one, Extreme Dance takes awards at Beyond the Stars competition. Extreme Dance recently competed at the Beyond the Stars Regional Dance Competition at the Grand River Center and garnered several awards. Extreme Dance is made up of 85 dancers from the tri-state area, ranging in ages from 3 to 18. Competition results? 13 and older stellar awards. We have winners Ambriel Bessler, Sienna Boyer, Bella Donner, Kylie Elliott, Isabel Falbo, Briellen Giesler, Geisler, Kinsley Getkin, Kendall Jacoby, Sammy Mai, Miley Mendiger, Cameron Merrick, Lauren Reeves, Eva Rigopopoulos, Faith Schauer, Marie Schreier, and Faith Sullivan. 12 and younger, Ambriel Bessler, Briellen Geisler, Kinsley Getkin, Faith Schauer, and Faith Sullivan. First overall all-star production. First overall all-star 13 to 15 large group. First overall all-star 13 to 15 line. First overall all-star 13 to 15 small group. First overall all-star 10 to 12 small group. First overall all-star 7 to 9 large group. First overall all-star 7 to 9 small group. First overall all-star 6 and younger small group. First overall rising star 6 and under small group. First overall rising star and 6 and under large group. First overall star 16-19 solo, Sienna Boyer. First overall all-star 13-15 solo, Briella Geisler. First overall rising star 16-20 solo, Bella Donner. First overall rising star 7-9 solo, Lucy Kirk. First overall rising star 6 and under. Wow, that's a lot of stuff. And I'm sorry in mispronouncing the names as I probably did. But lots of you might have young ones. And we want to say congrats to them. For our closing piece, we have A Decade in the Making, which comes with a large picture of a choral group. And it's a performance of Dubuque Chorale Children's Choir. They performed on April 27th. When Carmela Sellers steps to the podium, raises her arms, and begins to draw the youngest of voices together in harmony, there is nothing quite like it. It's students from all of these other schools from across the tri-states making music together, she said. It's amazing to watch every week. Sellers, who teaches elementary music at Bryant and Kennedy Elementary Schools in Dubuque, also serves as the program director for the Dubuque Chorale Children's Choir. The youth offering will celebrate its 10th season this fall. When the Colts youth choirs folded and its former director moved away, former Dubuque Chorale director Bob DeMara saw an opportunity, Sellers said. We started discussing it in the fall of 2013, and by spring of 2014, we started the youth ensemble and realized it was a good gig. The initial ensemble has since been divided into a pair of groups comprised of the Legati Singers, including students in grades 4 through 6, directed by Sellers, and the newly formed Staccati Singers, including students in 3rd grade, directed by Victoria Bausman, an elementary music teacher in Bellevue. The Staccati Singers, which formed in 2022, acts as a preparatory ensemble for Legati Singers, in addition to helping maintain a manageable number of participants. Following the COVID-19 pandemic, the Legati Singers saw a marked growth with approximately 100 youth hoping to join from public and parochial schools throughout the tri-states. Dividing the third graders from the 4th through 6th grades has been a great decision for us and helped keep the group's numbers to around 50, Sellers said. That's still a fair amount of kids participating, which is impressive because there are a lot of opportunities for youth in the area. It also enables the directors to meet the students where they are in their music journey, according to Bausman. During those 4th, 5th, and 6th grade years, you see a lot of voices changing and a different understanding of musical concepts, she said. With the 3rd grade ensemble, we can continue to focus on the basics and build their voices and their musical knowledge and understanding. For students wanting to participate in the ensembles, a voice placement interview is required. Upcoming interviews are set for 9:15 a.m. Saturdays, May 4th, 11th, and 18th at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church, 1755 Delhi. The word audition can come with a lot of baggage, especially for younger kids, Sellers says. Our goal is to create lifelong singers. The voice placement interviews allow us as directors to hear each student so we know how to best serve them. Rehearsals take place from 5:15 to 6:30 p.m. Mondays, beginning September 9th, with concert highlights throughout the season, including a fall performance, holiday concerts with the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra, Songfest with area community and collegiate choirs, and a spring performance. Tuition is $150 for the year, with second or more children in the family, $25. Need-based scholarships also are available. In addition to helping students hone their musical development, Sellers and Bousman said participating in such ensembles also can yield life lessons, even though kids might not immediately make those connections. Participating in youth ensembles like this was a treasure for me when I was a kid, Bousman said. It was a joy to be able to make music together, but it also was a team effort. It took me and all of the other kids to act as one great voice. Sellers agreed, adding that the social benefits from learning music and participating in an ensemble create the framework for empathy, compassion, and creative expression to flourish. It exposes students to different individuals and cultures and teaches them how to work together as a team, get to know one another, and build confidence and independence, Sellers said. And hopefully, singing in a group like this inspires them to have music be something they'll keep going with. You have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken out of my regular Friday reader seat down here in Missouri, but in the Thursday slot, reading from the Thursday, May 2nd edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And as I say on Fridays, you not only get the news Monday through Friday through IRIS, but there are so many other program possibilities awaiting you, just turning it on and turn the dial and see what comes up. Enjoy listening to all of our voices, bringing you whatever news and entertainment that we may be able to do. So you may not hear me here Thursday again, but come next Friday, I'll be back in my regular seat, trying to bring you, or not trying, but bringing you the news of that day. So until then, take care, be safe, be kind.